Welcome to Fritz and Friends. I'm Cheryl Fritz, coming to you on 1320 WILS and streaming live on 1320WILS.com. Going out on the phone now to our friend Derek Walbank, who is the Washington correspondent for the Min Post. Good evening, Derek. How are you?
Not too bad, Cheryl. How are you?
We've been busy, fast and furious here in Michigan at the Capitol with budget negotiations and things now moving on to the governor's desk. You're doing the same thing, ramped up a bit out in Washington. Tell me about the last week or so.
Well, you know, it's been very busy out here, although on the budget front, it's a lot of activity and very little that's actually going to be happening. The Senate had four votes on four different budgets earlier this week, and none of them passed. None of them even came close to passing. Probably the most notable one was the Paul Ryan budget, which was the House Republican budget, included all those overhauls to Medicare and things like that. That didn't come close to clearing the Senate, and in fact, a handful of Republicans actually voted against it. So here we are at square one. It's a nice place to be, and we should get comfortable because we're about to stay here for a while.
So really, you're just seeing a flurry of activity, but little action is what you're describing.
Yeah, really little progress on these fronts. You're talking about right now just laying down a lot of markers, I think is the best way to say it. You know, people trying to say, well, this is what I believe and this is what I don't believe. Leadership trying to tell the other party, hey, look, you don't have the votes for this. Let me prove it. So there you have to give some things up and let's have some negotiations. This is a lot of signal calling right now and not much actual voting to solve the problem and move on.
Well, what are the deadlines we're under?
Well, the deadlines for the next two big things, first one is the debt limit. We've already reached the national debt limit, and that happened a little bit ago, but the Treasury is taking a series of what they call extraordinary actions, basically moving money here and there and doing this, that, and the other, and they say they can hold off until we actually run up against the we can't borrow any more debt limit until maybe August 2nd. So in between here and now, somehow the expectation is we'll have a vote to raise that debt limit. Next week we'll have a vote to do it with no strings attached in the House, and that's supposed to get killed by a large, large number. Republicans want a lot of cuts in order to trade off for this. Democrats not so thrilled with that, but the big problem that we have with this, Cheryl, is that the sort of cuts that are being demanded are cuts that Democrats are never going to go for. And there's really no grand incentive for people other than preventing a financial catastrophe to vote for it. And what I mean by that is that politically raising the debt ceiling is incredibly unpopular. It pulls subterraneanly. It's not even in the toilet. It's down in your septic tank somewhere under that. It's wildly unpopular, so no one has this sort of political incentive to be the guy who's trying to do this, but at the same time, I don't think they want the U.S. to default.
Well, and this gets bandied back and forth, you know, the debt ceiling has for a long time now. I guess I'm just wondering where we go with this. And I mean, we're a month, you know, a couple of months away from the August 2nd date. But I mean, what's going to change between now and then when someone's willing to do something?
You know, that's a great question. The best analysis I've read on that came to the same sort of I don't know that said if August the 2nd's the deadline, expect some serious work on August the 1st. The general consensus is, look, unless this gets to be an absolute terrible emergency, there's not going to be much action. Now, I'd put a big old caveat on that. If the House votes next week to not raise the debt ceiling and the market implodes because they don't realize that this is just a political showmanship vote, and the market, not the market, because the market's an inanimate collection of things, but if individual investors who take rational decisions actually believe that Congress is going to let the United States default on its debt, then you start to see serious repercussions. The biggest thing I can compare this to is if you remember when we're having the economic crisis just started going real heavily in late 2008, and that bailout bill failed. You remember the market just dived, and right after that, they brought it right back and it passed. That's the end game.
So that's what we're looking at again, conceivably.
You could be, yeah. You very conceivably could be. That is where I think right now we are with the end game, and unless something happens weird between now and then, that's, you know, sort of what we're watching and waiting for.
So they're just watching each other across the aisle to see who's going to blink first?
Exactly, and they've rigged little devices up to their eyes to stop them from closing. It's very, you know, if this is a staring contest, these are 2 9-year-olds, and who are being just as petulant as they can be. And that's just sort of how we are.
Well, that's a great analogy, Derek. I'm wondering about the vote with the Patriot Act last evening.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it went through by a fairly comfortable margin in both houses. You know, and what I'll tell you what really surprised me about that, Cheryl, is that there wasn't too much controversy with that. You know, I remember a few years back the Patriot Act was derided by many people as the worst thing. The worst thing in the world, and a dramatic overreach by the Bush administration, and the Obama administration really pushed through a Patriot Act extension that it changed some things around the margins, but it didn't really change the crux of the law. And that seemed to go through pretty well without incident. So I think the big story there is that there really wasn't much to do about that.
Yeah, he's just kind of following the line of President Bush.
Yeah. Yeah, kind of, and you know, it's interesting to see how much that happened. You know, the one time that hasn't happened, and the one thing that I think bears watching is that there was a little stunt vote in the House about, ooh, do we want to recast the mission in Afghanistan now that Osama bin Laden's dead and he was found in Pakistan? That was supposed to get just thrown out, and it only failed, I want to say, by less than 15 votes. It was really razor tight, and there were a lot of people, you know, in the leadership offices who really weren't sure there at the end how that vote was actually going to go. And so that's going to be something to watch going forward. The other thing I thought was interesting is that Democrats have started throwing out these sort of austerity measures, basically telling Republicans, all right, if we're in so much trouble, you got to cut this, you got to cut this, you got to cut this. And they've failed on every one of them. There was an amendment in there earlier this week to make sure that the military spent no more than $200 million a year on military bands. Right now, the military spends over $300 million a year on military bands, orchestras, things of that nature. That passed. No one expected that to pass. It passed. It's attached to the defense authorization bill. I don't know if it's going to stay in there all the way through the process, but that passed. So if Democrats are starting to get some success in these little gotcha amendments that they're putting forward, if you're going to cut here, we're going to cut there, that's going to make this really, really interesting going forward.
Well, very interesting. I'm all for pop and ceremony, but my...
Yeah, it's quite a lot of money, but I'll tell you, it's a lot different than what's happened earlier, because Democrats have tried to do the same thing with military sponsorships in NASCAR, for example, and that's gone nowhere. So it was really interesting to see this one actually finally get through.
That is interesting. On the national front with Minnesota Stars, apparently, in presidential race coming up, Pawlenty and former Governor Tim Pawlenty and Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, some really interesting things happening right now, aren't there?
Oh, there really are. You know, it's Minnesota's a beat that gives and keeps on giving. You know, it's interesting because it's going to be a state where there's going to be two people seriously involved in the conversation. Tim Pawlenty, some Michigan folks might not know who he is. He was a two-term Republican governor of the state of Minnesota. He started out as a pretty moderate guy, back to cap and trade, some other things like that. But as his term went on, he got a little bit more and more conservative. And now he's running pretty much as a very, very conservative ex-governor. Michelle Bachmann, I think most people know, she needs very little introduction. It's going to be interesting. You know, she says she's going to announce something in June. Her staff tell me now that she's very likely to run, although that could still possibly change. But we're hearing yesterday that old Sarah Palin might have something to say about things. And if she gets into the race, that would be very interesting. The other name I need to put on your listeners' minds here is a guy named Herman Cain. Who's Herman Cain?
I know Herman, who he is.
Okay. The key with Herman Cain, who's a former pizza executive of Godfather's Pizza. I don't know if anyone's had it. It's okay.
that's not the discussion today, though.
That isn't. The thing that is the discussion is that Herman Cain, African-American businessman, pizza magnate, has really started popping in the polls. He is coming in double digits in states where he hasn't campaigned. I don't think a lot of people know who he is. The support for Herman Cain among people in the Republican primary who know who he is through the roof compared to other candidates in the field. And if that keeps coming, he's going to come out of nowhere and he's going to be a serious force. So he's one to watch.
Well, and besides being in talk radio, I listened to a lot of talk radio. So I had heard him several times, and he's done talk radio himself as a host. And I did hear him at the I did watch the South Carolina debate, presidential debate, and he took that. According to everybody polled and who watched, he took that and ran away with it.
You know, I met Herman Cain in Manchester, New Hampshire, at an appearance. He was on stage with Tim Pawlenty, he was on stage with Rick Santorum, the Pennsylvania senator, or the former Pennsylvania senator. He was on stage with Michelle Bachmann, Mitt Romney. Big kind of who's who field. And Herman Cain more than held his own. He is a man who knows how to turn a phrase. He is very, very convinced of his beliefs. There's no wiffly-waffly's. You know, you might not agree with his prescription, but you can read it. You know, that's what it is. And he's going to be somebody, I think, if he gets the message behind, if he gets the attention, he's going to be somebody that people are going to have to pay a lot of attention to.
Well, it's great information, as always, Derek. I love talking with you. You're in all of it happening in Washington, D.C., and I'm always grateful that you're generous enough with your time to share it with us. So thank you so much.
I appreciate it, Cheryl. Have a great one.
Have a wonderful weekend as well. A wonderful holiday.
All right, bye.
Thank you. Derek Walbank, who is the Washington correspondent for the Min Post, formerly with the Lansing State Journal. That's how we know him here as well. We'll be back with more Fritz and Friends on 1320 WILS after this.